Okay, so today we're diving headfirst into a case that's a total clash of titans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking antitrust law slamming into the world of e-discovery. It's like a real-life legal drama.
Sounds juicy. What case are we looking at?
It's Dahl v. Bain Capital. Huge implications, especially for all you aspiring lawyers out there.
Ah, Dahl v. Bain, a classic. Collusion accusations and a massive e-discovery brawl. What more could you ask for?
Seriously. So in this deep dive, we're going to break it all down. The accusations of secret deals among these private equity giants and this knockdown, drag-out fight over electronic documents.
All right, I'm ready. Let's get into it.
So first up, let's set the stage. We're dealing with leveraged buyouts, LBOs for short.
LBOs, the bread and butter of the private equity world.
Exactly. We're looking at deals that went down between 2003 and 2007, and we're talking some serious heavy hitters here. Bain Capital, Goldman Sachs, Blackstone, KKR, Carlyle Group, like the A-list of private equity.
The who's who of Wall Street.
So what was the big accusation being thrown around?
Well, shareholders in the companies that got scooped up in these LBOs, they came out swinging their claim that these private equity firms, they weren't playing fair. They were all buddy-buddy working together to keep those acquisition prices nice and low.
So instead of competing hard and driving prices up,
they were basically colluding to avoid bidding wars, which meant shareholders got the short end of the stick. Their shares were undervalued.
Interesting. And I imagine this claim had a solid legal foundation.
You bet. The legal bedrock here is Section 1 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. It's all about preventing anything that messes with free and fair competition, contracts, conspiracies, anything that unfairly restrains trade. That's a big no-no under the Sherman Act.
So to win, the plaintiffs had to prove that these firms had some kind of sneaky agreement in place to stifle competition.
Right on. They had to show that these private equity firms weren't just operating independently, but were actually coordinating to keep acquisition prices down.
So what kind of smoking gun evidence did they present?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. They managed to unearth some pretty damning communications between folks at these firms.
Like emails and stuff.
Emails, memos, you name it. And what did these communications reveal? References to club etiquette and agreements not to jump each other's deals.
Club etiquette? What does that even mean?
Basically, an unspoken understanding that they wouldn't step on each other's toes. If one firm had publicly expressed interest in a target company, the others would back off. No aggressive bidding wars allowed.
So they were trying to maintain this gentleman's agreement to avoid driving up prices.
Right. A you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of situation. And that, my friend, reeks of a market allocation conspiracy, you know, where firms carve up the market and agree to stay in their designated lanes.
Fascinating. So how did the court react to these accusations?
Well, in 2013, the defendant firms tried to shut the whole thing down with a motion for summary judgment. Basically, they argued, look, there's not enough evidence here to justify a trial. Let's just toss this whole thing out.
And did the court buy it?
Nope, not a chance. The court said, hold on. There are some serious questions here that need to be answered. There's enough evidence to suggest a possible conspiracy, and that means this needs to go to trial.
So denying that summary judgment motion, that was a big deal, right?
Absolutely. It put immense pressure on those private equity firms. They were staring down the barrel of a very public, very messy trial.
And no one wants that kind of bad press.
Especially not when you're dealing with billions of dollars and your reputation is on the line. So guess what happened?
They settled.
You got it. To avoid the risk and uncertainty of a trial, they opted to settle the case for a cool $590.5 million.
Wow. Talk about a hefty price tag.
It was one of the largest antitrust class action settlements ever, especially for a case focused on market allocation that didn't involve the government cracking down.
So what's the main takeaway here for our future lawyers?
A big lesson. Even informal agreements, like this club etiquette thing, can land you in hot water. They can be seen as anti-competitive behavior and come with some serious consequences.
Like a $590.5 million consequence.
Exactly. And beyond the financial hit, it really shines a spotlight on the potential antitrust risks lurking in those club deals that are so common in private equity.
Makes you think twice about those backroom handshakes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's just one side of this case. Remember, we also had this epic e-discovery battle going on.
Right. Let's switch gears and delve into that. What was the main sticking point in that whole dispute?
It all boiled down to the plaintiffs wanting to get their hands on all sorts of electronic documents. And not just the documents themselves, but also the metadata.
Metadata, for those who don't know, is basically information about about the document itself.
Like when it was created, who modified it, things like that. It's like a digital fingerprint. And on top of that, they wanted these documents in their native format.
Or Schmadeus.
So imagine an Excel spreadsheet. The native format is how it's actually used and stored, with all the formulas and functionality intact. That's different from, say, a PDF, which is just a static image of the spreadsheet.
I see. So why was getting those native format documents so important?
Because it gives you a much deeper level of insight. You can see the formulas, track changes, and really analyze the data. It's crucial for building a case like this.
But the defendants weren't exactly thrilled about handing over all this information.
Oh no, they pushed back hard. Their main argument? Cost. Producing all those documents in native format, including metadata, that's a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of money.
So it became a classic standoff.
Yeah.
Who pays for all this e-discovery?
Exactly. And the court had to step in and lay down the law.
And what did they decide?
They basically followed the playbook laid out in Rule 34 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which is the Bible for discovery.
And what does Rule 34 say about e-discovery costs?
It says, in general, each party foots the bill for their own discovery efforts. Now, there's a caveat. If one party is being difficult or doing things that unnecessarily jack up the cost, the court can step in and say, hey, you need to help cover the other side's expenses.
Interesting. But in this case, the court didn't see any reason to shift those costs, right?
Right. They didn't find any evidence that the defendants were being intentionally obstructive or making things harder than they needed to be.
So the plaintiffs were stuck paying for their own e-discovery.
Yeah, which is pretty standard practice.
Mm-hmm.
But the court did make a key ruling about the format of those documents.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
They basically said, look, Rule 34 says you have to produce documents as they are kept in the usual course of business. And for these financial wizards, using Excel with all its formulas and functions, that's how they do business.
So handing over static PDFs wouldn't cut it?
Nope, not at all. The court said that for these types of business records, native format is the way to go. And that's a pretty significant precedent. It emphasizes the importance of getting the full picture when it comes to electronic evidence.
What about the metadata? Did the court side with the plaintiffs on that?
Well, they acknowledge that metadata is generally part and parcel of electronic documents. So unless there's a good reason to remove it, it should be included in the production.
But there's a catch, right?
Always a catch. The court also warned against using metadata requests as fishing expeditions. You know, just blindly asking for everything under the sun, hoping to stumble on something useful.
So be specific, be targeted, and make sure your metadata requests are relevant to the case.
Exactly. No going on a wild goose chase with metadata. So we've got these two big threads, the antitrust allegations and the e-discovery battle. How do they tie together in the grand scheme of things?
Right. Let's zoom out and see the bigger picture.
Well, Dalvey Bain Capital is a prime example of how seemingly separate areas of law can collide in a big way. You can't really understand the antitrust side of this case without appreciating the role of e-discovery.
Because the evidence that supported those antitrust claims, it was all electronic, right?
Exactly. Those emails, memos, spreadsheets with all their formulas, that's what ultimately gave the plaintiffs a fighting chance. So for all you future lawyers out there, this case screams one important message.
Hit us with it.
You can't just focus on mastering the substantive law, like antitrust law. You also need to be a whiz with the procedural rules, especially those governing discovery.
Because knowing how to uncover evidence, that's just as important as knowing the law itself.
Precisely. And in today's digital world, that means understanding e-discovery inside and out. It's not just a technicality. It can make or break your case.
So what's the big takeaway for all those junior associates starting out in the trenches of litigation?
I'd say this. Pay attention to how your clients handle and store their electronic information. You need to understand the why behind their methods. Because if those methods end up making discovery more expensive down the line, you're going to need a solid argument for why the other side should help foot the bill.
So document everything, understand the rationale, and be prepared to justify your client's e-discovery practices.
Absolutely. Because Dalvey Bain Capital shows us that these issues aren't just abstract legal concepts. They have real-world consequences, both in terms of money and how entire industries conduct themselves.
Right. This isn't just theoretical stuff. It's about big money, corporate strategy, and the power dynamics of the legal system.
And for you, the future legal eagles listening in, the lesson is clear. Master both the procedural and the substantive, think strategically about discovery, and never underestimate the power of electronic evidence.
It's not enough to just know the law. You have to know how to use the tools of the legal system to get to the truth. And in a world increasingly dominated by digital information, e-discovery is one of the most powerful tools in your arsenal.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time.
See ya.